Good morning. I'd like to call to order the Committee on Health and Human Services. It's Wednesday, March 6th, 2024, and we do have a quorum present. We have a lengthy agenda with compact bills today, and so they are different professions, but there will be some similarities and some differences. I hope that that when the bills are presented, you know, if we can make sure that we understand kind of the operational status of the compact you're presenting. Is it active or in progress? And how much work is left to be done before the privileges begin to be issued? If you can highlight key benefits you think for Minnesota and how Minnesota standards are addressed, if there, you know, are differences between states. So hopefully we can hear some of those things from each of you. And and so the first bill on the agenda is Senate File 2990, Senator Nelson. And welcome to our committee. And please go ahead and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's great to be before the Health and Human Services Committee and part of this compact day. I am bringing before you Senate File 2990. Would you like someone to move that bill, or would you like a discussion first?
Go ahead, and you can present your part of the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill that I have before you, Senate File 2990, is the Dentist and Dental Hygienist Compact. It is an interstate occupational licensure compact. You're familiar with those. It's one of the legislatively enacted contracts among states. As you know, with compacts, it will enable licensed dentists and dental hygienists to practice in all states participating in the compact, rather than getting an individual license in every state in which they wish to practice. Just like other compacts that we have, like the physician compact, for example, the compact states agree to mutually recognize the licenses issued by the other participating states. I have a couple testifiers. Madam Chair, Bridget Anderson is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. She would like to testify, and also Matt Schaefer, Council of State Governments. And as they're coming up, I'll just give a little bit more on the background and the benefits. The Dentist and Dental Hygienist Compact, it was developed in collaboration with the Council of State Governments, with the National Center of Interstate Compacts, and with the Department of Defense. It was released to the states, to your question about the history of the compact, it was released to the states in January of 2023, and it has been gaining momentum since then. Three states have already adopted the Dentist and Dental Hygienist Compact, or DDH Compact, and the DDH Compact has been introduced in many other states, much like our state. Some of those benefits, Madam Chair and members, obviously include that it facilitates multi-state practice, and as you know, we live in a more mobile world than ever before. It enhances license portability when changing state of residence. It expands access to care by allowing dentists and dental hygienists to practice where there's the most unmet need. Reduces the burden of maintaining multiple licenses. It expands employment opportunities into new markets, and it ensures regulator retention of jurisdiction over the practitioners working in their state. And it promotes workforce development and strengthens labor markets. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be glad to turn over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Yes, the first testifier, Bridget Anderson, is on Zoom. Actually, both of your testifiers are on Zoom. And Bridget Anderson, if you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Bridget Anderson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. Thanks, Madam Chair and members, for allowing us to have our bill hearing today. I am actually going to defer my testimony to Matt Schaefer from the Council of State Governments. They truly are subject matter experts on all things compact related. and but I was part of the development of this compact. That's why our Board of Dentistry has brought our bill forward to you today. So I am available for questions, and especially questions pertaining to state regulation for the individuals that would be participating in the compact, and anything related to, you know, any questions on that. So thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'll be available here on Zoom for any questions after Matt's testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Schaefer, if you could state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Wicklund, Vice Chair Mann, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Schaefer with the Council of State Governments, and I just want to express my appreciation for your consideration of Senate File 2990, the Dentist and Dental Hygienist Compact. And my testimony is meant to provide background and educational information on the compact. So as was mentioned by Senator Nelson, the compact is a legally binding agreement between states. It was developed through a cooperative agreement that CSG has with the Department of Defense. And for the past 2 years, CSG has been working on developing the compact language with our partners from the profession, including the American Dental Association, American Dental Hygienist Association, a collection of state dental boards, the dental education community, and other stakeholders. And we do want to express our appreciation to Bridget Anderson, the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry, who played a really critical role in the development process. So as has been mentioned, the compact will enable dentists and dental hygienists to obtain a compact privilege to practice in other compact member states rather than obtain individual state-specific licenses in every state where they want to practice. So similar to the compact for your driver's license, each member state is agreeing to mutually recognize the license issued by the other compact member state. This compact is very similar in form and function to the two compacts that Minnesota is already a member of. That's the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact and the Psychology Interjurisdictional Compact, or CIPACT. The dentist or hygienist must hold an active unencumbered license from a compact member state to be eligible to apply for a privilege. The practitioner must also pass a background check and meet other eligibility requirements related to education and examinations. The compact also benefits military families. If a military family gets assigned to a new duty station in a compact member state, that service member or their spouse can continue to work on their compact privilege rather than having to get relicensed in the new state that they move to because of that basing decision. From a regulatory perspective, the compact preserves the authority of each member state to protect public health and safety through the existing regulatory structure within its own borders. A licensee practicing under a compact privilege must abide by all the laws, rules, and regulations that govern the practice of dentistry or dental hygiene in the state where they are located. And the Minnesota Board of Dentistry has jurisdiction over anyone practicing in Minnesota under a compact privilege. Minnesota will also be able to charge a fee for that compact privilege, so they'll be able to recoup some of the revenue from maybe fewer out-of-state applicants now applying for a full dental license. Like all occupational licensing compacts, the Dentist and Dental Hygienist Compact is governed by a commission made up of the member states, and the delegate will be a representative of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. As was mentioned, this compact will come into effect when it's enacted by seven member states. There's actually four states that have enacted the compact, including Minnesota's neighbors in Wisconsin and Iowa, and that number will very likely be five by the end of the week. We have a few bills at the very end of the legislative process that we expect to pass soon. It's pending an additional 12 state legislatures this session. So if enacted, Minnesota would have a seat at the table when the Compact Commission has its first meeting to establish those rules and bylaws that govern the compact. So with that, I will conclude and be happy to answer any questions from the committee, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was very helpful information to have. Members, do you have any questions about this compact or for any of the testifiers or Senator Nelson? Senator Oetke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my comment for this one is going to be the same as for the rest of them, so hopefully I'll just make it once and be done. But these compacts are great. We need to move Minnesota into the modern times. We've got a bunch of them in front of us today. We've got some others that are on the table that we haven't seen hearings on yet. But I suggested I could bring an amendment, but not for today. But anyhow, these things are good, and we just need to. We've got a mobile society, and we have the mobile providers, and we need to be open to working with them however we can, and these compacts are a step in the right direction. So thank you for giving us a number of these today in the hearings. They are a good deal.
Thank you. Any other member questions or comments? One question that I have either for you, Senator Nelson, or a testifier, being that this is early in the process, do you feel that the board has a good understanding of the kind of the costs involved in being able to get things set up once the number of states are, you know, the threshold is met and the first, I guess there's the first commission meeting, but then some time goes by while the operational work happens. Do you think that, do we have a good idea of kind of what the cost will be?
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. I think that's a good question. And of course, I had that question too as I was reading through the legislation. And I feel comfortable for a number of reasons. Number one, we have history in front of us of the number of compacts that we've already joined and how those have progressed. And so I think that lends some historical perspective. And then also, as you might recall, this compact, like many others, has one member of the compact commission. Every state has one member who is on that compact commission. And so, of course, it's like a representative democracy. We count on our state's commissioner and every other state's commissioners to speak to those issues of, I think, maybe what you were maybe getting at. Could those costs be runaway costs? We don't want to see that, of course. And I think just the very makeup of the commission itself would lend itself to mitigating that any tendency to do that. And then also the fact that we can look at how other compacts have rolled out as well.
Thank you. I guess the only other question maybe would be for Ms. Anderson, wondering how will the state have visibility into the adverse actions that might be taken in another state to be able to address, you know, someone who is practicing in Minnesota with a compact privilege. Can you comment on what kind of visibility we have into that?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you, members. So right now, so there's two ways that that's going to be done. Right now, when anyone is licensed in a state, they have to, they're evaluated and for licensure, and then the adverse actions are actually reported to a national practitioner data bank, is what it's called. It's part of federal law and federal reporting. Those actions from each state are reported there. So even prior to them gaining a privilege, they are reviewed, you know, through that process. And then after that process, if we take an action, for instance, in Minnesota, that's where our data sharing and our compact database, if you will play a role in that. So then if an action is taken here, that's put into that database and reported out to the states that they share a privilege. And once that happens, they begin to, well, first of all, they lose privilege, you know, to participate in that. And then, you know, that's where other states have that ability to see too. And so would Minnesota being, you know, part of that compact, part of a compact state. So it's done two ways. So on the individual evaluation on the front end, and then also continuously through this data sharing.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Any other questions? Well, Senator Nelson, any final comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the good hearing. I do want to just direct members to the letters of support in your packages or online. Of course, the Minnesota Dental Association is supporting. They have a strong letter that you might want to review. Also, the Minnesota Dental Hygienist Association is supporting this as well, and you might want to review that. And in addition, the Association of Dental Support Organizations is supporting this compact. I would just like to note that to be active in the compact, kind of to your question, Madam Chair, the license must be unencumbered from any other state. In other words, if there's an adverse action, that would be an encumbered license. So it needs to be an unencumbered license. And one thing I know that's always important in Minnesota, because we demand and expect high quality, is the training. And of course, as you know, much like other compacts, compact participant must have passed the national board examination or other exam accepted by the compact, and they must also complete a clinical assessment, and they must have been graduated, they must have graduated from an accredited commission on dental accreditation, and of course no disqualifying criminal history. So we've this compact, as many others, has really tried to take all of those things into account to make sure that our compact actually is benefiting patients all across our state. And as you know, I'm sure all of you have heard from your constituents, there's an immense shortage in dentistry, particularly for lower income Minnesotans. And also, which I didn't know until just this past interim, there's also a huge shortage of dental hygienists, and some dentists are actually needing to limit their practice because they can't even get the dental hygienist that they need. So I'm hopeful that this compact will help us fill those needs and better serve our constituents. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. This bill will need to go on to the Judiciary Committee. So, Senator Nelson, I will ask Senator Oetke if you would move that Senate File 2990 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
So moved, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion does prevail, and Senate File 2990 is passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. The second bill we have on the agenda is Senator Morrison, Senate File 1322. Thank you, Senator Morrison. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to hear Senate File 1322. This bill would add Minnesota to the 36 states and the District of Columbia that have already joined the Physical Therapy Compact. All four states neighboring Minnesota are Physical Therapy Compact members, and we are notably absent. The PT Compact is an agreement between member states to improve access to physical therapy services for the public by increasing the mobility of eligible physical therapy providers to work in multiple states. This will increase access to care. It will bring revenue to Minnesota hospitals whose PTs will be able to provide care via telehealth to discharged patients who return to their home state. This is important to national referral hospitals like Mayo and Gillette Children's. It will also benefit local hospitals and clinics who may have patients who are snowbirds or students who live in part of the year in another state. The compact is already supported by multiple healthcare entities, and I'm not aware of any opposition to the compact. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. And Ms. Urich, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah. Megan Urich, Chairperson Wickland and members of the Health Human Services Committee. My name is Megan Urich, Doctor of Physical Therapy and President of the Minnesota Chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association, or APTA Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1322 concerning Minnesota joining the Physical Therapy Interstate Licensure Compact. I'll echo what Senator Morrison said in that we're joining 36 other states and the District of Columbia, and we are surrounded. All the states around us have already joined the compact. We're excited about the compact, not only because it's going to benefit physical therapists and patients here, but it will also benefit Minnesota businesses and the state's economy. The PT compact has been actively issuing compact privileges since 2018. So that's specifically answering one of your questions, Senator Wicklund, from earlier today. And it's especially attractive to travel and military spouse PTs with primary residence in Minnesota because it lowers costs, simplifies CEU requirements, and makes renewals easier. I have personal experience with this, as at the beginning of my career, I did travel PT for several years and was licensed separately in 9 different states, which was very complicated in keeping track of the renewal cycles and different requirements for each state, and really was unnecessary administrative burden. So the PT compact really simplifies this process, but also preserves the safety of the public because it's on the therapist to make sure you know the PT Practice Act of that state. You have to be practicing under those laws when the patient is located in that state. If an infraction occurs in our state, the Minnesota Board of PT can step in, as can the board of the therapist's home state. Joining the PT compact has 2 main benefits for patients in Minnesota as well. One of them is continuity of care. So a common example that comes up, especially in Minnesota, is let's say a patient had a total knee replacement. I've been treating them after surgery for a couple of months. They're doing pretty well, not ready to be discharged yet, and they're going to snowbird to Arizona because usually it's cold in Minnesota winters. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to be discharged yet, but also don't really want to start up a whole new plan of care with another therapist in Arizona. This would be a great use of telehealth services where a Minnesota PT could treat that patient while they're in Arizona if they had compact privilege in Arizona. Another example of how the PT compact would benefit patients in Minnesota is by quick response to the need for care. So in Minnesota, we're a unique state in that we have several large organizations who have clinics in both Minnesota and bordering states. So an example here would be, actually, personally for me, I'm due with my first baby in about a month, and I'm going to be going on maternity leave. So if I work for a company that has clinics in both Minnesota and Wisconsin, while I'm on maternity leave, one of my colleagues in Wisconsin could apply for compact privilege in Minnesota, help cover for my maternity leave so my patients don't have any disturbance in their care plan. We have support of Mayo Clinic, Gillette Children's Hospital, CentraCare, Avera Health, Essentia Health, Health Plan Partnership of Minnesota, and Medical Alley. Healthcare provider shortages are all too common in 2024. Whether it's finding providers for underserved areas, covering medical leaves, or staff transitions, employers need to be able to find qualified providers quickly in order to avoid interrupting care and also to keep healthcare dollars in Minnesota. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. We've had several meetings with the Minnesota Board of PT, and they are neutral on Minnesota joining the PT compact. I look forward to continuing to work with the members throughout this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that testimony. That is the only testifier I have on the list for you for this bill, Senator Morrison. Members, do you have any questions about the physical therapy bill? No? No? No questions. Well, I will just ask, again, I think you touched on most of the items that I was interested in knowing. In this case, regarding the operational status, since this has been active for quite a while, relative to some of the other compacts that are just getting started, do you feel that Minnesota becoming part of the compact now, do you see any, I don't know, less benefit because we won't have the influence on the original setup of the commission and compact language, like, for example, with the dental and dental hygienist compact, where they're kind of working on the original starting process of that. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Chair Wicklund. Because we have been able to see what has happened with other states joining for several years now, I have no concerns. I actually just talked with Jeff Rosa, who's the PT Compact Administrator, yesterday, and really asked him if there have been any concerns from the 37 now jurisdictions who have joined, and really there hasn't been. It's been a positive experience for therapists and patients in that state.
Thank you. I guess I don't have other questions, if there aren't other member questions. Senator Morrison, any final thoughts that you want to share?
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present the PT Compact Bill. Appreciate the consideration, and I hope that we do join.
Thank you. So, Senator Morrison, the motion would be to recommend that Senate File 1322 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. And that is your motion.
That is my motion, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion does prevail. Senate File 1322 is recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. And thank you. And now you have the next bill is Senate File 1445, Interstate Compact for Professional Counselors. And I've been told, Senator Morrison, that you have an oral amendment, but if you want to, do you want to present your bill first, and then we can deal with that?
Madam Chair, sure. I would love to take care of the oral amendment that the eagle eyes of our Senate counsel discovered, and perhaps he can help us with it.
Mr. Hodala, can you tell us where that oral amendment is headed?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I can briefly explain the reasoning for the amendment, which really is a minor technical change. The applicable language is in Article 4, specifically Bill Lines 8.5 to 8.6. Those lines relate to the requirements for a licensee to receive the privilege to practice in other member states. The specific issue is due to a minor typo, which makes the paragraph A in that, or H in that article, circular. The language refers to paragraph G twice, whereas it should be paragraph G and then paragraph A. That's the way that the standard compact language is written. So the amendment would be to change that second paragraph G to paragraph A. If you would like, I can state the oral amendment.
Yes, if you could state it, and then we will move that.
Senator Morrison moves to amend Senate File 1445 as follows. Page 8, line 6, delete paragraph G and insert paragraph A.
On that motion of the oral amendment, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1445 as amended, which is an interstate compact for professional counselors. The purpose of the counseling compact is to facilitate interstate practice of licensed professional counseling with the goal of improving public access to professional counseling services. This helps create access and continuity of care for veterans, college students, and those in rural areas. This will help Minnesotans seeking mental health care, as well as Minnesotan LPCCs. Access to care, obviously, is a huge issue we're seeing in this field, and we need to support our mental health infrastructure. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Hannah Daniels. I'm Minnesota Counseling Association president, and I'm also a licensed professional clinical counselor in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. Like most of the compacts we have heard today, very similar. Not going to go into depth about it because that's just not my style. I do have a picture of us being the lone state right here. So we are surrounded by dark blue, which means the compact is there. So 33 states have approved the compact already. And we're the outlier. We're the empty one. The light blue means we have legislation, working on it, right? So that's why we're here today. A few differences in our compact and just the way we practice. So over 50% of therapy is telehealth only. So we're seeing a lot of people that only want telehealth services. They don't want to go into the office. They don't want to waste more hours of their life driving to places, right? So we do see a lot of clients that are they zoom in, they zoom out, and they get on with their day. Another important thing is that, for those of us that work with teenagers like myself, they go to college, right? Where do they go? Sometimes they go to the state of Minnesota, right? Other times they go to Wisconsin or Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota. I can't practice with them anymore. I can't see them anymore. And that's really hard for them, right? Because they've spent their time, 4 years sometimes, with me, their whole high school experience. And suddenly they have to find someone new. I've seen college students actually, fail college because they couldn't find the mental health support their first year and have to move home. So that's been really hard for them to kind of switch counselors. But yeah, thank you so much for your time. I think that's all I have to add. The rest of it's very similar to the other compacts we've heard today.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Abler.
Well, thank you, and just a more clarifying question. It's the licensed professional counselor compact. Does that include the licensed professional clinical counselors as well, or is
it's only for LPCCs? So, licensed professional clinical counselor, which is the highest license for clinical counselors. Yeah.
I was the author of both of those, so I was happy we did. It's just funny that the term. So in Minnesota, LP licensed professional counselor is a category and a thing, and it's not a LPCC, which is a higher thing. So. Mm-hmm. These words are what the words are to be part of the group, so you can't really change any words, but I just appreciate the clarification. So, this is not going to help any LPCs then.
Correct. Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Anything else? So this one, there are actively states that are issuing privileges or receiving privileges in their state for the compact practice, Ms. Daniels?
So that will begin in 2024, so that's this year in July. So they will be accessing privileges in July of this year. So,
do you have any idea of how long it will take as a new state joining, how long it takes to get the operational work done, Ms. Daniels?
I actually have no idea about that.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, Senator Morrison, do you know?
Madam Chair, I don't have the exact answer to that question.
Okay. And I don't know.
My understanding is that it happens pretty quickly, though, but I don't have precision in an answer.
Okay. Not sure. We have someone from a counseling company here, but I don't know if they can address that question, how long it takes. Is it Samantha Strelo?
Hey, an answer. Thanks.
Maybe you please state your name.
Good morning. My name is Samantha Strelo. I am the executive director with the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. I don't have, an exact answer for how long that will take, but I can kind of talk about what we do know will need to happen. I think the biggest thing for us is that sort of push and pull that will need to happen between the two databases. So our internal database and the database that the compact will have that will allow us to share information. That's something that's not built yet. So I do anticipate that that will take some time. I would estimate that us, even if this were to pass this session, being able to start issuing compact privileges by the end of the year probably would not happen. My guess that it would be sometime in 2025.
Thank you. I appreciate knowing that. Yeah, I'm sure there's. Do you have a pretty good idea of the work that's going to be involved? I mean, in the costs that might be involved?
We are actually working on that right now. We have a fiscal note that's due early next week, and actually what we're waiting on at this point is that cost for the database portion of that. We don't know what that is yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any, I don't see any other questions. Senator Morrison, any final thoughts about this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present the professional counselors compact. You know, I think the example to me of the college student who's been receiving care for 4 years really brings it home. Of course, we want our students to stay in Minnesota to go to college, but many of them do go to our bordering states. So happy to carry this bill and hope that we move forward with it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And the motion for Senate File 1445, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. Is that your motion, Senator Morrison?
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion does prevail. Senate File 1445, as amended, is passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. Thank you very much. And Senator Morrison, we have Senate File 4076, Social Work Services Interstate Compact Establishment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 4076, a bill to allow Minnesota to join a new social work interstate compact. This allows qualified social workers to practice in compact member states. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier.
Ms. Yang, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senate Committee. My name is Joy Yang. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Social Work. The Minnesota Board of Social Work supports this Social Work Compact Bill, Senate File 4076, and that we... the Compact Commission has not been established yet. The Social Work Compact language was finalized February of 2023. And so we have two states who have passed the Social Work Compact Commission, which is Missouri and one of our neighbor states, South Dakota. We do know that our other three border states have legislation. Two of them have introduced legislation. One is preparing to introduce legislation. And so the board supports this compact language, partly because we would like to be part of the Compact Commission that established some of these rules. As you know, our mission as a board is to protect the public through licensing and regulation. And we want to ensure that also, we have four different license types, and ensuring that those are all considered in our compact commission rules, rulemaking process, and so that it would be inclusive of all that. And that, you know, one of the things I've heard, and I won't also go into details as to what the compact is, but one of the things I would, why our board supports this and say, you know, how does this maintain our standards of protecting the public moving forward is the fact that the Minnesota board already has a process called licensure by endorsement, in which it currently allows, right now, the majority of our licensees in that endorsement process is from our border states. And so we do know that some parts of our states are border to major cities in which it allows that mobility to serve without stopping that continuity of care. And in addition, we also know that it's important at times for our public to have access to even maybe culturally specific providers or a specialty in service that may not be available within their area, and that telehealth services through this multi-state license for social work allows, you know, that that access, you know, for the public. And so that's a huge part as to why we as a board is supporting that. And we anticipate that some of the questions I've heard this morning about just ensuring that someone is adhering by, you know, our statutes and, you know, following our standards of practice. And that's what we do with our licensure by endorsement. And we anticipate that being a part of the Compact Commission, that we can continue to stress that and continue to enforce that, you know, even within the Social Work Compact, that we would still enforce our standards of practice, you know, among those licensee. And so I thank you for your time this morning to testify. I know we have additional testifier in which they can give more examples to support as to the importance of the Social Work Compact Commission for us. So I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you very much. And I have on the list, I have Eden Liebenthal. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, everybody. My name is Eden Liebenthal. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota in the Social Work Master's Program. I am here today to endorse the Social Work Interstate Compact, which gives the Minnesotan social work workforce more accessibility while maintaining a high standard of practice and care. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in social work from the University of South Dakota in 2022 and was admitted to the Minnesota Master's of Social Work program with a concentration in community practice soon after. This track and specialization for the social work program is actually not even available in South Dakota, so I knew I needed to move here in order to pursue that education. And Minnesota was the closest state with this respectable concentration. After I graduated, I felt that I needed experience in the real world before I invested more time and money into my education. This is a sentiment shared by a lot of people my age and is recommended, actually, by many graduate admissions programs. I made the decision that I would not apply for licensure in South Dakota because I knew I would have to restart the process within a year since my license would not transfer to Minnesota when I moved for school. I ended up working a year as a community health worker in a non-social work setting. I moved to Minnesota this summer before my graduate program started, and while I wanted to immediately be employed within the social work field, it would have taken me around 3 months to complete everything within the licensure process, which would overlap with my intensive graduate program. I decided to instead work remotely for a South Dakota company, even though I wanted to gain experience in my field and there were more than enough open social work listings for jobs. If the compact had been in place, my plan would have been much simpler. Graduate from South Dakota, apply for my license right away, work a job in South Dakota, and then apply for social work jobs as soon as I moved here to Minnesota. South Dakota has recently passed the Interstate Compact, and I know Minnesota would have a lot to gain from doing the same. Social work graduates are prepared to join the workforce in multiple places as we move to pursue education and other opportunities. All we're asking for is support in getting through the transition. Please vote to support the Interstate Compact. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for it. It's great to have a real-world example of how this would benefit you. And the next testifier I have is on Zoom, Renita Johnson. If you can please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Renita Johnson. I am a licensed clinical social worker in the state of Minnesota only. I have chosen not to be licensed in any other state or jurisdiction due to barriers that include additional training, expenses, and/or the requirement to take another exam. I am a clinician that provides therapeutic services to clients that are part of an unrepresented population in the mental health field. My clients seek me out specifically due to my culture, my ethnicity, gender, and my areas of expertise. Clients I serve have experienced complex trauma, have had negative experiences with providers in the past, and or have limited support. I often work with clients that continue with services for several years due to the trust that has been built throughout the therapeutic relationship. I have experienced on multiple occasions where services and treatment has had to end due to, for example, high school graduates that have transitioned to post-secondary schools out of state. And we've heard a little bit about that from the LPCC board or behavioral health. This also includes families that have had to relocate out of state for various reasons. On every occasion that this has occurred, I've been asked if there was a way to continue services, primarily due to clients not wanting to interrupt those services, especially during these transitional times, and the anticipation and frustration of having to reestablish new healthcare relationships. It is during these times that I find my work very problematic due to the interruption of services, especially since my services are provided via telehealth. I'm here today to express my support for the Interstate Compact, and it is my desire to pursue a multi-state license via the Interstate Compact if this opportunity is granted. Thank you for your time and allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your testimony. Members, do you have any questions for Senator Morrison? No? I guess I will just ask if Ms. Yu or Ms. Yang, if you know, do you have a good idea of how quickly the work would get started if, you know, if we were to pass the bill in terms of working with the other early states that are going to be working on the language, as you mentioned, you'd like to be a part of the early part of the process.
For the Social Work Compact Commission, we need 7 states to pass this legislation, and we're at 2. So we're hoping that this legislative session will be successful for other states as well. Just looking at the map, there looks to be about a little bit over 20-something states who have legislative, you know, language put forth. And so I would say it maybe will depend upon if we get the 7 states, and that's a little bit hard to give a timeline right now around that. I think the other thing, which you just heard in the last bill, too, is probably the time that involves securing a compact database and, you know, making our systems be able to work together, that may take some time. So it's a little bit difficult to put a timeline on that, but I would at least, I mean, think about just initially having 7 states pass legislation to form the compact commission first.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions? I don't see any other questions. Senator Morrison, any final thoughts?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the social work compact. I think these compacts are popular, and it reflects the great need that exists in our state and other states for particularly mental health care workers. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I do appreciate your talking, Ms. Yang, about the fact that you have the licensure by endorsement right now, and so you do have processes for vetting candidates, and that will go into any future work for that type of effort. So thank you for the background, and your motion would be to recommend that Senate File 4076 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion does pass. Senate File 4076 is recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And now we'll move to Senator Kupek, the Physician Assistant Licensure Compact Establishment. Senator Kupek.
Good morning.
Please go ahead and present your bill.
Sure. So I have Senate File 2394 for the Physician Assistance Compact. You know, we could probably just cut and splice and say a lot of the same things here. But so I'd like to just, you know, highlight a couple of things. And also I think it's important to kind of bring up the uniqueness, particularly how all of these compacts that we're hearing today kind of impact particularly districts like mine that sit on these border communities. But so for the Physician Assistance Compact, it's much similar to what we heard with the dentists and also just now, too, with the social workers. This is a new compact that is forming. And so much like the other ones, they're going to need seven states to pass that. Wisconsin, Utah, and Delaware have already done it. And Washington and West Virginia expected to go soon. And there are 13 other states also where this is pending. So the Physician Assistance Compact gives them privilege to practice in another state. They must adhere to the laws and regulations and practices in that state and are under the jurisdiction of the state's regulatory board when they are practicing. But particularly in an area like mine, where the Fargo, right across the border, is a huge medical hub, and so a lot of us travel over there. So particularly, it also hits around the telehealth. So say somebody from Senator Utke's district makes the hour and a half drive in from Park Rapids and comes over to Fargo, sees a physician assistant. Then if they were back home and they needed to have a telehealth conference, they wouldn't be allowed to do that because they couldn't, technically they'd be practicing in Minnesota on that telehealth call, even though they saw that person in North Dakota. So these really kind of hit home, particularly around the border areas. So the Physician's Assistant Compact is supported by the Minnesota Academy of Physician Assistants, the Mayo Clinic, Gillette Children's Hospital, Center Care, Avera Health, Essentia Health, and Health Plan Partnerships of Minnesota. And also, I will add that the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice voted back in January unanimously to support this proposal. So that's a good ringing endorsement, and they will be the ones also overseeing this. So I have Leslie Clayton here from the Minnesota Academy of Physician Assistants. She knows way more than I do.
Welcome back to the committee. Ms. Clayton, please go ahead and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Kupak. For the record, my name is Leslie Clayton. I'm a family medicine PA with 26 years of practice experience. I'm a PA educator and a health system administrator, and I represent the Minnesota Academy of PAs, representing over 4,000 licensed PAs in the state of Minnesota. This legislation is a result of a joint initiative between the Federation of State Medical Boards, the Council of State Governments, and the American Academy of PAs, and the National Commission of the Certification of PAs, who support the bill. It creates the Interstate PA Compact, and not just for telehealth purposes, but also for PAs that practice in multiple locations, particularly at border states. This creates a significant improvement in our ability to provide continuity of care. I want to be specific and just add a couple of highlight elements that this legislation does not change PA scope of practice. The laws of the state are still the laws of where the PA must apply, or they must practice within. They must be in complete compliance with the state in which the patient is located for when the care is rendered. I'm happy to share that Washington State did pass the compact just last week, and we are pending legislation in 13 other states, and we're anticipating 5 additional states to introduce the bill within the next month. This bill is passing rapidly due to the well-constructed language because of the association with the Federation of State Medical Boards and the State Congress. Once it passes by 7 states, it will be enacted. We are hopeful that we can get in that group so we can be part of the ones to help create the rules. And it's important to understand regarding PA practice that given that PAs are authorized by state and federal rules to be a patient's primary care provider, the compact allows the PAs to remain connected to their patients should they be snowbirds or work in various areas, such as our military personnel or the vastness of our large corporate employees who work at multiple offices across different states. It provides increased expert care and follow-up provided by PAs working in areas such as transplant medicine, oncology, and advanced cardiology, and other specialties where patients seek the high-regard academic centers we have here in Minnesota to provide care for numerous patients from other states who come to Minnesota for services only available by Minnesota teams, of which PAs are an essential revenue-generating member. when those patients come from other states to receive that high-level, unique care and return to their home state, should they be a part of the compact, our care teams will be able to continue their expert care through compact utilization. I thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present the bill. Thank you, Senator Kupak, for carrying, and I look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you very much. Members, any questions about the Physician Assistant Compact Bill?
Just for clarification.
No. I take it that you'd like to be able to get this passed this year so that you can be part of the initial rules development. And do you have any sense of, I guess, the timeline for establishing all of the operational aspects in Minnesota once that would, if that happens?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the question. It's in line with the other compacts, such as the dental compact. It's approximately a 24-month process for the commission to create rules and apply them for the compact to be able to enroll in the other states that have passed the legislation. I will also say that the PA compact is what you might consider the 2.0 of the physician compact, which Minnesota is a member of, because the Federation of State Medical Boards took the learnings that they had from the application of the physician compact and put in those upgrades to the PA compact. So they're very enthusiastic about the structure of this bill.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any other questions. Senator Kupak, any final comments about the bill?
Not so much about the bill, but Madam Chair, I would just like to thank you for hearing all of these today. These are, particularly, I think, in my area of the state, these are really important to hear these compact bills. So I appreciate that we are having these hearings. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Seeing no other questions or comments, your motion, Senator Kupak, would be that Senate File 2394 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Commission or Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Yes, that is mine, because I love that committee. Thank you.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion does prevail. Senate File 2394 is passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
It's all yours. I got them all warmed up for you.
I tried to save you.
And now we will move to Senate File 1572, Senator Abler, Occupational Therapist Licensure Compact Establishment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think as we did more of these, the testimony gets shorter except about specifics. But so I think I'll just this is a great bill. The world's going to be a way better place if we can pass it. Actually, there's 25 across the country, so I just thought, hey, this is a tipping point here. So that word has not come up yet today. So I'll let my testifier tell you about the bill, and then I have some comments at the end. Thank you.
Ms. Sames? Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Sure. Chair Wicklund, members of the committee, my name is Karen Sames. I'm a volunteer with the Minnesota Occupational Therapy Association, testifying in support of Senate File 1572. I want to express my appreciation for your consideration of the Occupational Therapy Licensure Compact Bill, the OT Compact. This measure is a joint initiative between the American Occupational Therapy Association and the National Board for Certification of Occupational Therapy. The American Occupational Therapy Association is the national professional association established in 1917, if you can believe it's over 100 years ago, to represent the interests and concerns of occupational therapy practitioners and students and improve the quality of occupational therapy services. The National Board for Certification of OT is the national nonprofit organization that provides certification for occupational therapy professionals nationwide. It develops, administers, and continually reviews its certification processes based on current and valid standards that provide reliable indicators of competence of occupational therapy practice. And above all else, NBCOT's mission is to serve the public interest. The OT Compact utilizes a mutual recognition model of interstate practice, whereby Compact member states agree to recognize valid licenses issued by other member states. And I'll mention here that there are actually 28 states that are already in the Compact. They have already started their work in getting the systems ready, and we hope to issue licenses starting Compact privileges, rather not licenses, Compact privileges starting in 2025. This is made possible by the fact that the core licensure requirements for occupational therapists and occupational therapy assistants is remarkably consistent across all 50 states. To utilize the Compact, an occupational therapist or occupational therapy assistant must have a license in good standing in their home state, the state of their primary residence, and the home state must be a member of the Compact. When a licensee wants to work in another member state, known as the remote state, the licensee obtains a Compact privilege from the Compact Commission, the interstate body composed of the member state officials tasked with administering the Compact. A Compact privilege is equivalent to a license to practice OT in the remote state. The Compact preserves the regulatory authority of each member state to protect public health and safety through existing regulatory statutes and national licensure initiatives that supersede state regulatory authority. The Interstate Compact allows member states to continue to determine the requirements for licensure in that state, as well as to maintain that state's unique scope of practice for all members of a profession practicing in that state, whether through a state-issued license or a Compact privilege. So there is no lowering of standards when it comes to the practice of occupational therapy. Overall, it's going to improve access and continuity that you've heard testimony about already. It's going to increase portability for occupational therapy professionals based in Minnesota while maintaining the current system of licensure. And by sharing investigative and disciplinary information among member states, it will allow member state regulatory entities to better protect the public. I urge you to pass this file.
Are you going to talk about the amendment?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
There is an oral amendment I need to make, please. I thought we'd just get through all that and then. Madam Chair, to move on line 2.24, delete or and insert and. This is a drafting error, and as people may know, that you can be in the Compact or you don't get to be in the Compact, but the words are pretty well stuck with that, and I'll talk about immunity in a second after we do the amendment.
Mr. Hidalgo, can you state the amendment for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senator Abler moves Senate File 1572, page 2, line 24, delete or and insert and.
Any questions, members? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
You put out a memo, and I appreciate that, on the topic of immunity, which is not really a discussion point for this committee, but I don't know how it's resolvable. If you just to that topic anyway, since it's part of the bill in front of us, on page 15 from line 7 down to 33 or so, it talks about immunity from the members, officers, executive director, employees, representatives of the commission, for a whole bunch of things. They can't do overtly bad acts, but it's a novel insert, and I'm friendly to the issues that are about protections from people who are harmed by a commission or a group, and that'll be taken up there, but I don't know how the fix is going to work if there's a fix, unless all the other Compact signatories wanted to change it. So we'll take it up there, but I just wanted to mention that I think most of these Compacts have such a kind of a statement. So,
yes, Senator Abler, I think all of them that we are hearing today have similar construction. I think we did work through it with the SIPAC. Senator Morrison was part of that when she was in the House. There was, a way to work through it. So I would just suggest that you consider talking with the people who know about that, and maybe check in with Senator Morrison as well, because it is something that you know, will come up in that committee, and I think there are ways that we can it can be addressed. So, but thank each you. Compact is its own. So yeah. We need to make sure that you have that conversation with stakeholders.
I just wanted to raise the point, since yeah. It hasn't come up on the rest of these. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to undo my particular bill here. And if there's any questions, otherwise I've got a closing comment.
Members, do you have any questions? I don't see any questions. It looks like this, in terms of operation, being that there are enough states have joined and you have a defined date for those states to begin issuing privileges, it's more or less well on its way. And so if Minnesota were to pass it, then I imagine there would be an implementation time for that. And I don't know if you can speak to that, Ms. Sames, but.
I know that the Board of Occupational Therapy Practice needs some time to get their system coordinating with the compact system. And I don't know, Chris.
And if, I don't know, if the Board Executive Director,
Chris Borland is the Executive Director.
If you would be able to comment a little bit about the work remaining for the Minnesota.
Good morning.
If we were to pass the bill. Good morning. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Chris Borland. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Occupational Therapy Practice. And can you just remind me of the question? Or
Just about the implementation timeline for Minnesota if we were to pass the bill. It looks like, you know, there's enough states have already enacted mm-hmm. so that it will become operational, or privileges will begin to be issued, I think she said next year. And I just wondered if you have any sense of what the timeline for Minnesota would be if we were to pass the bill.
I would think we would be on a similar timeline. I know they are in process of their RFP for their database, and we are, similar to the counseling compact, we're also working on that fiscal note and that estimate from our database developers. So I would expect that shortly we would, once if the bill were to pass, that we would be able to start that implementation and look at that process. So we would be ideally within that time frame or shortly thereafter, after they started issuing privileges.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Senator Abler, any final comments?
Thank you. And related to all these bills, and this bill is a wonderful bill. The people that are working in the field are amazing, and this is going to make it better for so many. We've heard that about all these bills. But I just wanted to just go back a little to a larger picture. As we make licensure more flexible and draw people into our state, the whole Minnesota healthcare industry is part of that, and that's our charge here. But the behavior of various kind of the health organizations and so on still can confound some of the best benefits of this. Allina is closing its pediatric department in May. They're laying off pediatricians. They're going to rely on children's. They are closing Unity's operating room and ICU. And I'm concerned about the capacity. And so as we improve here, the behavior of these big plans that have actually consumed small providers that used to provide a safety net is a great concern to me, not just in greater Minnesota, Madam Chair. I thought that was a thing, but I think just wanted to point out to the committee, while we're working on this piece here, part of the rest of it is crumbling, and in the name of money. And, you know, Allina, just that's my hospitals in my area there. They're going with this benchmark thing and reducing the levels of service to a much lower to some percentile across the country, and not even useful on the numbers of real needs. So just to help you with this, this is a wonderful bill. It should pass. I hope we can get it through the judiciary, funnel there. But I just wanted to call attention to that and why I had a chance at the public table here. And I know you're concerned about that, and this is not a partisan matter, but this is really just concerning to me. So thank you for the moment. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll move that this bill go off to a wonderful destination of judiciary.
Senator Abler, your motion would be that Senate recommend that Senate file 1572 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion does prevail. The Senate file 1572 as amended is passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. And Senator Bolden. Senate file 2656, audiology and speech language pathology, interstate compact creation. Thank you, Senator Bolden. Please go ahead and present your bill. Oh, I believe you have an amendment, an actual printed amendment that's in our packet.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Senator Bolden moves the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Please proceed, Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am pleased to be before you with Senate File 2656, which is would establish an occupational licensure compact for the speech language pathologists and audiologists, which would allow licensed speech language pathologists and audiologists to practice face-to-face or through telehealth across state lines without having to be licensed in additional states. And so by this point in the hearing, you're familiar with the concept of compacts. So a speech language pathologist provides services to remediate communication issues related to articulation, language, or voice impairment. And an audiologist provides services to remediate hearing, balance, or ear problems. Speech-language pathologists and audiologists provide care in acute care and rehabilitation hospitals, outpatient clinics, schools, nursing homes, private pediatric practices, private practice, autism programs, and other medical facilities across the state, providing much-needed necessary services to Minnesotans. Since 2020, 30 states, including Iowa, Wisconsin, and Nebraska, have become part of the licensure compact for this group of individuals. And just a note that this would not change licensing requirements in Minnesota. New entrants would still have to meet the requirements for licensure in their state. This proposal just allows licensed audiologists and speech language pathologists to practice face-to-face or that telemedicine, telehealth across state lines without having to get multiple licenses. And so we have a couple of testifiers to talk a little bit more about it and then happy to take any questions.
Thank you. I'm not sure which order you'd like to go in. Lion Decker.
Perfect.
Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair Wicklund. And my senator is Vice Chair Mann. And the members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here. And thank you, Senator Bolden, for sponsoring Senate Bill 2656, the Audiology Speech Language Pathology Interstate Compact. My name is Jason Leindecker. I'm an audiologist and the immediate past president of the Minnesota Academy of Audiology. I reside in Bloomington and own private practice serving for audiology and tinnitus care in both metro and rural communities throughout greater Minnesota. I strongly support this Audiology Speech Language Pathology Interstate Compact. This bill can really change the quality of care our patients and your constituents deserve. As you may know, our profession is facing a job force crisis, just like all the other ones so far. And we have ways to improve that. By allowing us to use the technology at our hands, we can actually program hearing aids directly through a cell phone. So we are able to see these patients at a distance. But our licensure law is now keeping that from happening. Where does this affect me the most? I provide tinnitus care, which is a greatly underserved population of patients. And patients travel several states to see me, and this would allow for me to be able to see patients via telehealth. My colleagues of Minnesota all over have snowbird patients, and this would allow for them all to be able to see their patients while they are living at a distance. More locally, there are practices and hospital systems that have clinics in bordering states, and currently this requires audiologists and speech-language pathologists to be licensed in both states. I myself had a clinic in Superior, Wisconsin, who recently has passed the compact, and it needed to be shut down multiple times because of trying to get licensure in both states. And I have other colleagues that have also had this happen to their practice as well. This bill will also allow for our military families to have more efficient transition into our state and having more often moving from state to state. There are now, as she said, 30 states involved with this bill, including our neighbors in Wisconsin and Iowa. Being part of this compact will allow for audiologists to have a quick transition into Minnesota. What this won't do is change the requirements of Minnesota that we have prided ourselves on of becoming audiologists in our state, and will require anyone requesting privileges in our state to abide by our laws. It is important to know that our laws are not keeping up with the technology we have to treat our patients successfully. This is not just about hearing aids, but also cochlear implants and speech and language hearing care. And this compact can change that immensely. But thank you for allowing me to address these issues.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Toole, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Wicklund. Please state your name
and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Nancy Toole. I am a speech-language pathologist. My current position is I'm the SLPA program director at Alexandria Technical and Community College, and I'm the most recent past president of Minnesota Speech and Hearing Association, whom I'm representing today. I agree with Jason's comments. We are kind of in the same boat in that we have a shortage in our field, and we think that this would address and help with that shortage. Along with that, we too have patients who are being seen for stroke or memory loss, swallowing deficits, and they could be also snowbirds, and we would want to continue care with them via telepractice. It also would address military spouses, as Jason said, too, that work within our field. We want to have the continuation of care. That's what we want the most, and we want to have qualified people put in front of our Minnesota citizens, whether it be telepractice or in person. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Members, do you have any questions? Senator Utke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at the A1 amendment, and in which takes us back to page 21, subdivision 3, why is that removed, or what part was that doing? I see where the language is added earlier on in the bill. Was this duplicative, or is this the licensing commission? So I'm kind of wondering why that data is not flowing through to them.
We have someone who could answer that.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Josh Nye. I represent the Minnesota Speech Language Hearing Association. Senator Utke, to your question, that language in conversing with Senate Counsel, that language was deemed unnecessary. There is language identifying at line 16.24 information that could be deemed private or public by member states in the compact as part of the data system. So it was removed as it was deemed unnecessary or duplicative.
Senator Utke.
And the data then that we're speaking of is not playing a role in the licensing as far as making sure everybody's fully qualified and doesn't have a record that would cause a problem either here in our home state or a compact state?
Mr. Nye?
Madam Chair and Senator Utke, I think that's a great question. So Article 8 of the bill, which is starting at line 16.5, identifies this data system that the compact or member states of the compact would join into so that we could learn who is licensed in other states, who meets the minimum requirements, if there are any adverse actions taken. And so to your question, is this connected? I would say it is connected, but it it ensures that you know, somebody who applies for a privilege to practice in Minnesota from Wisconsin, we can go, or the Minnesota Department of Health, which oversees speech language pathologists and audiologists, would allow them to go into this data system to make sure that they are, in fact, qualified to practice here, that they haven't had any adverse actions, and that they can and should receive a privilege to practice in Minnesota.
Senator Oetke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I appreciate that. And just a final comment. We've reached the end of all of our compact bills, and again, I appreciate hearing from all the testifiers today, and these things are so important. Senator Kupak talked about being a bordering city and the fact that we stretch it out a little further to get into our rural areas, but all of our small providers rely on the specialists that come from the big city, and in our area, that's Fargo. And so that mobile provider network, some are already covered, but others could benefit from all of these, and it just helps. It's a workforce issue. We talk about the snowbirds. I mean, that just sounds like home. We include all of those topics and all of those people that we need. So. Again, I thank you for hearing these bills today, and I see a lot of upside to these, helping our providers and our patients and citizens all across the state.
Thank you. Any other member questions, comments? I guess I don't have any other. I think my questions have been answered. Senator Bolden, any final thoughts?
Just thank you for hearing and appreciate member support.
Thank you. So Senator Bolden's motion will be Senate File 2656 as amended, be recommended to pass, and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion does prevail. Senate File 2656 as amended is passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. Thank you, members, for the good discussion about these bills and hearing about them today. We do have a couple more related to professional licensing tomorrow and other bills on the agenda. And seeing that we're at the end of today's agenda, we are adjourned.